Blog Talk Radio.
Gathered round the fire, there beside the sea, Jesus asked of Simon Peter, "Do you love me?" Three times Peter answered, for three times he denied, "Lord, you know I love you."
By the Midway Road Church of Christ. The first station is on radio.co. It's called Feed My Sheep, much like this one here on Blog Talk Radio. The second one is called The Great Commission, and it is on Live 365 Radio. The purpose of the two stations in this show is to do what we are commanded by God in the Bible, which is go and teach. We plant the seed, we water, and God gives the increase. Today, I want to welcome a gentleman who I have much respect for. We've just been sitting here visiting, and I have an awful lot of respect for this man. He is a minister of the Lord's Word. He preaches at Savona Road Church of Christ in Port St. Lucie. He also has a podcast and radio show locally here in Port St. Lucie. So without further ado, before I introduce him, I want to tell you a little bit about their website. It is called We Are Just Christians. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are just Christians. That's all we're known by. We're not Baptist. We're not Methodist. The only name we go by is Christian, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to Brother Mike Schmidt, the minister for Savona Boulevard. Mike, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for asking me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And
we don't know each other except for the last hour.
I know.
Half an hour, 45 minutes. So I don't want people blaming you for what they hear from me today. So.
Oh, I love carrying the blame. I'm a very responsible person.
All
I'm responsible for everything, whether it's my fault or not. But that's okay. Because if we, as just Christians, do not teach the message as it is given to us from the Bible by God, then we answer for that, do we not, Mike?
I think so. You know, I've been a preacher since I was 22 full time. I'm 68 now, however many years that is. And before that, I preached in summer too and things like that. So it's been a long time. I was a young man and doing mostly work in small churches in South Florida for most of the time, or in Tampa. And so I wasn't preaching in Nashville or Birmingham, places where you might find churches of Christ in every corner and history of things. And so what I found early on was to do evangelism is I had to talk to people about being just a Christian, not trying to convert them and tell them my church is better than your church, if that makes any sense to you.
Makes
my denomination is better than your denomination. I was trying to go back to the beginning, because this is how what I grew up hearing, this idea of the plea to go back to the first century. And I just, I guess I kind of thought to myself after seeing it that a lot of even churches of Christ aren't really doing that. They're not living that. They're stuck in something else. And so that's why I've emphasized all the way through that in all this preaching, being just a Christian. That's why our website is called that. That's why, you know, even on the visitors cards and a couple of churches I preach, it doesn't say Savona Boulevard Church of Christ. It says, welcome to the Assembly of Christians at Savona Boulevard or something like that. Because if until we use Bible names for Bible things, we're not going to get back to the Bible. So let's just be Christians. And I tell you, Yvonne, that resonates with a lot of people. Nothing is going to resonate with the mass of people because the gospel just doesn't resonate with the mass of people. But significantly more people, if you ask them outright, do you want to be a member of the Church of Christ? They would say no. If you ask them, do you want to be just a Christian? What will they say?
Yes.
They're going to say yes most all the time. Now then, there's a lot to go from there. You have to go much further, and many of them along the way cannot accept what it really means to be just a Christian because they won't accept the text of the scriptures as they are. They're still stuck in philosophies like Calvinism or evangelicalism or something. But be that as it may, I find I have a basis to start with ordinary people where they are that don't know all the ins and outs of particular denominations and religions. They've grown up to be a Catholic, a non-practicing Catholic, grown up in some denominational church, or they just know that they want to love Jesus Christ. And so if I start there with them being just a Christian, I have a shot of actually planting the right seed in their heart. It'll grow or it won't grow, but that's why I've emphasized this approach. I don't say this with any kind of pride. It's actually a shameful thing in some ways, to much criticism over the years for this approach by some people. But it's still the only approach I can live with.
And
I didn't start out to be a preacher, so I had to be a lawyer, you know, and I didn't have to do this, as it were. But then again, I did have to do this, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because maybe.
But I have to be able to live with myself in the end and say you have integrity about what you're doing, and it makes a difference what you're doing.
So let's talk about that for just a minute. Before the show, you and I were talking about our purposes in life, and sometimes it's like fighting against the current. We may know our purpose, but we don't want to do our purpose because it's not in our mind what we think we ought to be doing. But God has a way of nudging us into doing what we're supposed to do if we have an open heart. And you and I were talking about Feed My Little Sheep. Tell the audience the story you told me that made you realize that is very well your purpose, just to feed the little sheep.
Well, over the years, I can go back a long way and see this in my work as a minister or preacher, that most of the time I was dealing with people in trailer parks or federal housing projects or just ordinary woman at home with children that wanted to know something about the Bible. Of course, in my mind as a young man, I wanted something bigger and better. You know, I wanted to change the world. I started off to change the world, you know, and still do want to change the world. But in the end, I guess a couple, 3 years ago, I guess I was pretty frustrated. Seemed like the only people that were responding to me were people that had either emotional or mental problems or financial problems. I had to spend time with them. help them with their car or giving them money or just talking about this, that, and the other. And some of this. Don't know which came first, the sermon or my wife saying, you just preached about feed my sheep. These are your sheep. And I had made the point in the sermon that the Greek there, especially the first, I think in the first case and of there in John 20 is where he tells, Jesus tells Peter, feed my little lambs is the actual Greek. She says, Mike, these are your little lambs. This is what today, what now, this year, the Lord has given you. So go feed them. And it was helpful to me to realize that's what it was. And next year, it might not be those people or that thing.
It might be something else.
It might be something else. But in the end, and I had, I think I mentioned to you before, if you, we have, well, we did before this global, worldwide, unprecedented pandemic struck. We had a meeting at our homes once a month with whoever wanted to come to do just maybe basically a Bible devotion, read some scriptures and talk about them. And I had mentioned in that meeting something came up, and I said, well, my view of myself as a Christian is basically a fearful servant. And everybody looked at me because they don't view me that way. I'm one of the elders now for since 2004. I'm the white-haired old man. I'm the one of the, as it were, the one of the leaders of the church. I'm the one that's in front of them all the time, strutting around the pulpit with grandiose ideas. And so they weren't thinking this was what it was. Exuding generally self-confidence. I'm a fearful servant. That is, I am fearful of the master that I serve, to displease him, to dishonor him. And as a servant, that means I have a job to do that he's given me as a servant, not my own choosing, that I get assigned either daily or yearly, whatever it may be, that I have to work on. And in keeping, and that's how I feel most of the time. Now, I'm not saying that's the only way to feel or even the best way, and that's what I made in the sermon.
Right.
But I'm saying that's how I feel about things, and that colors what I do and how I think. And in that, then, when you realize you're just a servant, then it's okay for you to feed the sheep if that's your job. It's not a glamorous job, feeding sheep. And that means, as you pointed out, tending, feeding, guiding, protecting. It's not a glamorous. You know, in fact, the Bible does kind of hints at this, but the Egyptian culture, when the Hebrews came into Egypt, they wouldn't let them live with them because they viewed shepherds as being very lowly and to be a shameful profession. And these Hebrews were just shepherds, you know, wandering around the desert. And even in the ancient world, shepherd was a low occupation. And it, what did David's brothers say? Go back to the sheep.
Yeah, get out of here.
Soldier,
you're not a
warrior. You're a shepherd. So to be a shepherd in the Lord's church is not a position of great significant honor and sense of exaltation. It's a humble job, taking care of animals who don't always want to take care of themselves. If you're not willing as a minister or as a Christian to do menial things for other people, then you're not really worth much to Jesus Christ. That's kind of how I view it. Because even the widow indeed, she has to have washed the saints' feet, which is a very menial task. He didn't say, Yvonne, how many radio shows do you host?
Right.
Have you hosted to be the word, to be the widow indeed? And I don't mean that.
Right. I know what you're saying. Exactly.
He's not saying, how many sermons do you preach, Mike? How many people are you baptized? He's not asking me that. He's asking me, are you willing to do whatever people need with my word to them today? And it's hard to wrap your mind around that when you, if you go take leadership courses, even at Christian colleges, and courses about how to increase your platform and all the other things that we do as preachers and elders. I had he's preached in this area, a man Christian in this area, was mocking me one day in front of others because I was an ignorant preacher, and I may be, but his reason for it I don't think is valid. He asked me, who is the most important person in the church? And I said, well, Jesus says it's the one who serves. He said, oh, yes. He says, you're so ignorant, you don't realize that that means the minister is the most important person in the church, because the minister is the servant, and a minister and a servant are the same thing. And Jesus says, servants or ministers are the greatest in the kingdom. So the minister, he says, is the greatest in the kingdom. And I was just so astounded. I'm sure I looked like you do right now, Yvonne. But this was completely backwards of the truth. unfortunately, I don't think he's too far off from the lived experience of a lot of people with regard to preachers, elders, and ministers, not just in Church of Christ, but all across the world.
Right.
We see them fall every day. And what the theme that doesn't get talked about as much as it should is the pride and hubris. Now, we're rambling here, but in the Bible, pride and sexual immorality are linked together.
You're right.
In the New Testament. Those two sins just go hand in hand. Why is it we see people, these ministers, so-called ministers and so forth, involved in all these sexual sins? Because they're proud.
Proudful.
And until we can get, I don't know how you teach against that, because proud people, if a person's proud, he doesn't understand your teaching about it.
That's very true.
He doesn't even get it. He thinks you're talking about something else. And then you become proud that you're humble. Yes, C.S. Lewis talked
about
that.
Either. Yeah,
you're so proud that you're.
Well, the thing
you fight pride so much that you become humbler, and then you're really proud that you became so humble.
It becomes a vicious circle.
This is what C.S. Lewis said the problem with humility was.
And the thing is, what they tend to forget is their gift is glory to God. God is the one that gave them the ability to be able to deliver.
Whatever ability you have.
It's God-given.
Now, you make a choice as to how you're going to use that ability.
Correct.
I don't believe that God just does this and he does everything about it, because you have to make a choice.
You have to make a choice, and you have to take steps to make that choice come to fruition.
And then keep it where it's still useful and maintain it. If you... when I was starting out, people tried to tell me, you need to have a backup profession. You need to train in something else so that you have a way, this doesn't work out, this preaching thing, that you have something to fall, they would say, fall back on. And not terrible advice in a worldly way, but what I saw over the years is the preachers who prepared to fall back did so.
They did that.
Okay. Now, that's not saying it isn't sensible in some way. I've actually had to work at McDonald's and a pizza place, basically, at times in preaching, teach school to make ends meet. But those weren't my fault. I could fall back, I suppose. But
they were in addition to.
It's a choice that you make to keep doing it. And I've actually advised other preachers, I know, you need to stop, because the way you're doing the preaching is actually harmful to what you believe is good. Their manner and the way they treated people. And this is a friend of mine, one I'm thinking of specifically right now. He didn't intend to be the bad example that he was and leave a bad taste in everybody's mouth in the small town that he lived in, preached in, but he was. And I said, so, if you don't want to, you need to stop. Do it. Either stop doing what you're doing or stop preaching. He didn't like, of course, nobody likes to hear that, but that's true for me too, if that comes to that. There's going to come a day when I'm a doddering old man for sure, and it's probably going to be best that I
step down. But it doesn't mean that you quit teaching.
No, but it would be hard for someone like me, my wife can tell me, to sit in the pew every Sunday, listen to somebody else do this. I have to adjust to that. I've done a little bit of adjusting of that, and I'm fine with that, but we're way off the subject here, Yvonne, but when I was young, a couple people told me, one person told me, an older preacher, said, well, now, he says, the most person is going to give you as much trouble as anybody you're ever going to work with in a church is someone who used to be a preacher and quit and is now an architect or accountant or something. You're going to have more trouble with that person because he thinks he knows how to do it better than you.
Right.
And he's getting paid more than you are now in the job he's in. And so you're going to have a problem. And, there's a little truth in that. But on the other hand, I've seen just the opposite. Sometimes those men who have preached full time for a while and didn't work out for them are real supporters of those who do, because they actually know the good and the bad of the situation.
And this is what...
Now, I'm not complaining about being a preacher.
No, I know you're not.
I'm not at all. I've been blessed beyond measure for this. But that doesn't mean that there's not a lot that goes on there that is not pleasant or not hurtful to you as a person.
And this is what people in our audience need to know, because sometimes I think we get a jaded perspective of ministers and growing up in the church, I have seen the ministers and the burden that they carry. They have to be available 24/7. They always have to be ready to offer a hand up, give comfort, give whatever.
You always have to be right.
You always have to have
an answer that everybody likes.
Yeah. Your kids have
to be perfect. And I didn't realize, with having five kids, I didn't realize a burden it was on them until they were grown and we talked about it. It was a burden.
It is a burden.
Even though I didn't say to them, now you can't do that because I'm a preacher. I never said that to them. Still, they faced it. Whether they, even people intended to.
The wife is under a microscope. The kids are under a microscope. You're under a microscope. And
my wife has suffered more than me probably.
And the thing is, we don't understand, or we refuse to believe, that the minister who's supposed to be the wise man behind the curtain is human.
Well, now that's the thing that it can be judged some other time, but something that I, from the very beginning, realized I couldn't do was to pretend to be anything. And so one way that I head off some of what you're talking about there, and always have, to make it very clear from the pulpit, you know, my faults. I don't talk about them all the time, but I do talk about my failings, things I've done that, and not, you know, not, oh, well, you know, I smoke grass all the time, or I did this, or I did, you know, not that kind of thing.
Right.
But people, and I've told them, if you're expecting a person who doesn't have faults, you really got the wrong guy when I've talked to people about moving someplace, because my faults are going to be obvious to you from week one what they are. And I'm not going to hide them behind a facade of perfection. They're going to be what they are. And if what I teach or say and how I live in general doesn't outweigh that, then you do need to get somebody else. But you're going to have to accept me as a real person. My wife's a real person. Our kids are real. We live like a real family. And if you can't accept that, then, you know, then we're going to have to move along. I mean, this first Sunday I preached in this new church in Illinois, just moved to, I preached the whole sermon with my zipper down. Okay.
Well, that's
and then we laughed. I laughed at about it at lunch. And they could see. Well, see, when I moved to this church in Illinois, out in the country, far out in a small little town out in the country, away from the big city of Fort Lauderdale and Tampa, go to this small church, and I had everything in a semi-truck. That's how much junk I had, moving into a small little house the church owned. So the semi-truck pulls up, driven by another Christian, to the front of the house, onto the street now. And when we open up the back of the truck, I had put all the plants in pots that we had in the back of the truck. A couple of them got smashed. So onto the street falls a couple handfuls of dirt onto the street, anywhere. And one of the elders goes, oh, no, and he runs in the house, gets a broom and a dustpan, and he's sweeping up the dirt off the street. And I looked at my wife, and I whispered to her, I think we need to shut the door of that van right now. Because if that's the expectation,
we're in trouble.
You and I, we cannot do this. And that kind of sort of proved to be a little bit true. We can't live. We're not that way. We can't live that way. And I think that's an important part of it. But what do so many people see from the celebrity pastors, quote unquote, today is a person has to have the expensive sneakers of the right kind, the jeans torn in the right places, a certain kind of shirt, certain kind of hairstyle. And then they listen to that person. They follow that person. And then when he falls, they can't understand what the problem was.
Because they don't.
It's not real.
No, he's not real. He's plastic.
It's not real. He may not mean it, but it's putting up an image and something is phony. And yes, I dress up. I wear a tie every Sunday and a jacket. I preach in a jacket and tie every Sunday. Always have, most of the time. I probably dress better now than I did when I was a young man. But that's what I do. Because I feel like I don't think it's because the scriptures say that. I think it's because I'm trying to have people respect what I'm saying and doing.
And dress is an important part of, even in the business world, the way you dress is, and the way you present yourself is the way you're perceived.
You can say whatever you want about it, but I've stood in front of many audiences, and I have talked about some of my hobbies of being a nationally licensed poultry judge and running the state fair show and all the, just in the worldly sense.
Mm-hmm.
And people always listen to me more attentively when I'm dressed better.
And
I've seen it over and over and over again. So that's why I told my sons, my daughter, just dress. It's always better to be overdressed. I'm not saying this because the Bible says you got to wear a suit and tie.
Right.
It's not a uniform. But I'm saying that when you can present yourself well, but you still have what people saw when I was younger, they saw that my suit coat that I had on had baby puke on the side of on the front of it because I've been holding the baby before we got up there. You know what I'm trying to get
right,
at?
Right.
There's no pretense about that. It's just what it is. So this is what's missing for people. I think, and I think, Yvonne, this is what, from what I've been reading, this is what young people are looking for in the gospel. The word that they use is authenticity.
I think you're right.
This is what young people, and of course, my generation as baby boomers, I presume you're a baby boomer.
Yes, I am.
We were looking for authenticity too from the World War II generation.
Mm-hmm.
We went altogether the wrong way to find it. And now they're as phony as they can be. Most
Very.
Of them are.
Very.
Pretending stuff. But the young people want authenticity. This brings up something else I just thought of. You know what I've noticed the last few years in evangelism?
What's that?
I'm noticing I'm baptizing more and more older people.
Really?
A few years ago, I baptized a 95-year-old man. Now, when I was a younger man, baptizing anybody over 40 was almost unheard of. Almost all young people that you
right.
baptize. Now, I'm baptizing older people. We've had an influx of people at the church there, listening to the radio show, other reasons. They're coming in, and they're middle-aged and older, almost invariably. There's a couple of young families, but they're almost old. It's older. And I've concluded in watching and talking to them, these are people of my generation, the one down from me, who spent their life sex, drugs, and rock and roll or doing what they wanted to do. Now they're older, and they realize it's meaningless. It's been worthless. What have I got?
Vanity,
and
vanity,
so they're looking
vanity.
For something with meaning. Now, how or why they find us, I can't always tell you. I do think it's the we are just Christians thing. But they're looking for meaning. And if you're authentic in who you are and what you're teaching as a church, they respond to that. You don't have to be like them. You don't have to pander to who they are or what, you know, you don't have to be like them. You just have to be who you are and good at that. And then, and also then be good with who they are, accept
right.
them
where
they
are.
We've got people that now come in flip-flops and shorts. I don't recommend that. I wouldn't do that. But I know that the person is doing what they think is right. It never occurs. And I'm fine with that because they're real. And I know their heart is real because what they're – we baptized 6 people since January in the middle of this, and we baptized that many more last year.
In the middle of this insanity, when everything was supposed to be locked down. And
these are not all young
people,
right. I do think that in the big picture of things, authenticity and saying what you think is right nicely is the only way forward. Pandering to people – trying to figure out which way the political and social winds are blowing and going that direction, I don't think it's ever really worked, and I don't think it works today for sure. There's too much confusion. People are looking for someone who actually might know which way to go and can give them a reason for it. And
and you and I talked again before the show that while the world changes, technology changes, the delivery of the message changes even from the day of Pentecost, the message never changes.
No, it's figuring out how to communicate that message in the culture in which you live to the people that you, and that's not easy to do. Now, I grew up listening, of course, I grew up in the Churches of Christ in a very conservative, small church in Cincinnati, relatively small, with Kentuckians, because
mm-hmm.
that's what my mother's family were, the Christians. My father was a Roman Catholic until I was grown. He became a Christian later. And that's Cincinnati, by the way, for anybody who knows. It's German immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
My father was
mm-hmm.
a first generation in this country, and Kentucky hillbillies coming north for work, as my grandfather.
Right.
Anyway, so it's a small, very, very basic church. And I grew up hearing all kinds of preaching, but most of it was in the style, I would say, of oratory, or mostly just reciting dozens and dozens of scriptures in a sermon with little direct application.
Right.
Except once in a while you get a sermon with some application, which caused everybody's eyeballs to widen. And but my style of preaching came out of me. So I was a debater all through high school and college, and taught, coached debate, and all this kind of stuff. And so I have a pre-law degree from Florida College. I was going to be a lawyer coming out of high school. Oh, I was going to be a rich, nasty lawyer. Okay. And we can talk about that later. But my style is more, I would call it conversational. I'm not telling stories all the time, or it's not a narrative kind of preaching, but it's more having people jump into my train of thought and follow along
right.
with me. Okay. So it's conversational, not an oratorical pre-arranged address that's going to just follow what it is. I had an older preacher when I first started preaching tell me, as being kind of a mentor, you need to pick out a spot on the back wall and deliver the message you prepared, and don't pay any attention at all to the audience because they'll get you distracted. Deliver your message. Well, I knew even at 22 years old, that wasn't ever going to work for me.
That's not you.
I have to look at the audience. I respond to them in what I'm saying and doing. I remember even this past Sunday, I altered just some of the things I said a little bit because of who was sitting there that I knew had not been for a while, and I was trying to reach this person. It wasn't changing the message so they would like it. It was changing it so that it might resonate with them a little differently. Now, that's just a conversational style of preaching.
Right.
So this is now that was unpopular when I was first started with some people. They did not like that in preachers or in me, and I was bold about it, so they really didn't like it. But that's the way things have gone. Now, you know, I think that resonates with people today. Oratory just doesn't fit our time.
No, it doesn't.
And I'm not saying it's bad. I love it, but it's going to come back someday perhaps, but not now. Now people, because it doesn't create authenticity.
And it also doesn't create an open dialogue between two people, like the person that you saw in the audience and you wanted to resonate with them. That person might have come up to you afterwards and said, I want to know more.
Awesome.
That opened the dialogue of being able to communicate.
I'm not laughing at what you're saying. I'm laughing at what you're saying.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
But no, what I'm laughing at is this. I find that if I have prepared a sermon thinking about a person, and I don't usually do that, but
right.
if I ever do that, they're not the one that at all responds to it. It's
somebody else that
altogether
it.
That, and half of them, they don't even need it. If you preach about giving, the people that are already giving enough give more.
Right.
The people that aren't giving
aren't going to give
anyway, because they would have been giving already most of the time, not every time. So that's the frustrating part about it. But here's another thing that I've come in my senior years to really appreciate that resonates with me all the time, Yvonne. Ten that hath it shall be given.
Yes.
Ten that hath not it shall be taken away.
I've had
to come to live with that I'm trying to get this person to do something or these group of people to do something, and I'm not ever going to.
No.
It's the ones that already have it, that I can influence. Now, I do remember thinking as a young man at one of the first churches I preached at, because I was butting my head against a wall for a while. I was always gung-ho about changing the church and doing this and teaching the laws and all these things, you know, how you are when you're young. And it wasn't working well there. I was just making the older people upset. I thought to myself, well, look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to work with the people that will work with me. I'm going to, as it were, not be mean to, not criticize, not antagonize the people that don't, but I'm going to spend my time working with the people that will work with me. And so I spent my time with two or three. I said, who wants to go knock on doors with me? Who wants to go knock on doors with me? Sorry about my phone.
That's
just
okay.
Went off. I should have silenced that. But,
that's no problem.
Just because it's my granddaughter needing a ride somewhere. You know, we won't mention that. But who wants to go knock on doors on Friday nights with me? Well, only a couple people responded, so I stopped worrying about all the others that wouldn't and took those and we knocked on doors. And we grew. the church, we baptized people. The church grew.
Let me just interject something right there. Do you remember if you were ever in a growth class or a sales class, they use the 80-20 rule. You know, if you have 100 people, 80 are going to ignore you, 20 you're going to resonate with, one you might sell to.
Well, I didn't know that. That makes a little bit of sense.
But that's become the attitude of a lot of people within the Lord's church. Look, we don't knock on doors anymore because it doesn't do any good. So you're telling me of all the doors we knock on, we're not going to plant a seed in one person's heart?
You can, yes.
Exactly.
I can give you some advice about my experience, if it's any good or not. It depends on where you knock.
Oh, that's
but
true.
But you still can't discount. Look, after 46 years, I just never know who's going to respond.
Exactly.
I just don't know.
I grew up knocking
on
doors.
Yes, but I can give you some general impressions about where you might do it more successfully with better results. But it might not be that way at all. I mean, I remember as a young man, I had a scholarship to the Ivy League and all this junk. I didn't take it, but I thought, well, I'm going to go back there now that I want to preach. I'm going to go back to these intellectual circles, and I'm going to teach people in intellectual circles, philosophy.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, I could see pretty quick that would have been a very unfruitful and discouraging work, perhaps. You know, you don't hear much about the Athens Church of Christ in the Bible, do you?
Right, no.
You hear about Paul going to Athens, speaking, telling the truth. There was some Christians there, apparently.
Yeah.
But he went to, the next thing he did, went to Corinth. He was afraid. The Lord said to him, I have much people in this city.
Mm-hmm.
This city is Corinth, the Las Vegas of the ancient world, or worse. And yet Athens, the center of learning and sophistication, we find nothing. Now, if people pay attention, we're just looking in the wrong places. But I remember I've knocked on, me and a couple people with me over a course of 4 or 5 visits, almost every house in the city of Key West.
Wow.
Okay, almost. I had a map. And we went to places. I've been pushed downstairs. I've had dogs sicked on me there because I had a Bible in my hand. I've been chased out of a house by an angry man because I was talking to his wife, drunk. I had to run for my safety down the stairs out of there. And on the other hand, I've been welcomed to people's homes who didn't even speak English, could barely speak anything because I had a Bible in my hand. I found that the people that we were able to teach there came from the federal housing projects in the poor neighborhoods.
They were thirsty.
I remember one place I walked by, I had my Bible in my hand. It was years ago. And Key West is so eclectic. You got a hovel and you got a mansion. So I'm walking through there, and I see this white metal picket fence, you know, spending this long property by the sidewalk, a manicured lawn leading up to a pool and a patio furniture and a big mansion behind. A man was sitting at the furniture there, maybe 50 feet from the street. And as I kind of came in his view, we looked at each other, and he motioned with his hand,
keep walking.
And so I just said, what was that? And he just kept walking. It wasn't my job to, he already made his decision.
Right.
And so it was my job to go up and make sure he got a load of the gospel. It would have done no good whatsoever. But I wonder, now this sounds terrible, someday in eternity or at the judgment, he may say, Lord, you never told me about this. You never say anything.
And the Lord's going to say, you passed a man on.
Remember that little fat little guy with a Bible that you motioned on? I sent him to you.
Motioned him away.
Now, I don't know. I told myself that to feel better because that hurt me to be motioned away. But that's just what preaching is. We have to just get over that. We're a servant again. We're not the leader. We're not the king. We're the servant. So servants get pushed aside all
exactly.
the time.
And it's not about us that the rejection is. Right. It's about the rejection of God and the message.
It can be, but in the end, they're rejecting God. That means if you're being authentic and clear and that kind of thing, and they reject that, there's just nothing can be done about it. And I think God will give most of these people 2 or 3 chances to hear the truth if they want to. Whether they will respond, of course.
Well, it's like the man on top of the house in a flood, and the boat came by, and helicopter came by, and he kept saying, I'm waiting on God to save me. And finally, in judgment, God, he said, why didn't you save me? He said, well, I sent all these people, and you didn't get in the boat.
Or like the guy that falls off the cliff, since we're telling stories. On the way halfway down, he catches hold of a branch, and he's hanging there by one arm halfway down. And he looks up in heaven and says, God, help me, help me. And the voice from heaven says, let go of the branch.
Exactly.
He looks around. Looks around and says, is there anybody else who can help me?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, because this is the way this is the way it is sometimes. Now, let me say this, because this all sounds rather pompous, I suppose. But I've always been very grateful since I've been a preacher and an adult that I grew up with a parents, mother, and grandparents who knew the truth and who taught me from a young age to respect it. I started going to church. I was born premature. As soon as I got out of the hospital, mother started taking me to church every three times a week. And me and my brothers had to sit in the front row. The whole time I was growing up, we were the little four little boys sitting in the front row. And I'm so thankful for that, because I can tell you, knowing my own heart, I don't think it would have happened any other way. I think if I had lived, if I had had to do what I've tried to convince many people to do, come to believe in Christ simply and plainly as an adult and give up what I wanted to do, I would never have been able to respond. So I'm grateful that God saved me, maybe like Paul, mm-hmm. out of due time, as it were, because had you imagined Paul being an outright pagan living in Athens and coming in contact with the gospel?
Or in Ephesus?
Yes, he wouldn't have had much chance, you see. So as good a man as he was. So I'm grateful. So I'm not trying to demean people or speak ill of them in saying these things. It's difficult to make a choice to follow the Lord, because you just don't know where it's going to take you.
And you've got to be willing to take whatever path he directs you.
It's a pre-decision to follow him.
Right.
Follow me. And that's the hard one.
And it's also hard for people to give up. You know where Jesus says, leave mother, father, brother, sister, let the dead bury the dead. We can't wrap our heads around, you mean I got to give up all of this to have this? Well, the first this is temporal. It's not lasting. The other this is eternity with our Heavenly Father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and that's a hard concept when you're pagan to wrap your head around. Now, I guess you led me into one of my little pet peeves the last few years of this business of the flesh and the spirit, because I think that's the battle that we're talking about, flesh and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that because of the errors of Calvinism and Reformed theology that come from the Greeks, we have a very bad misunderstanding of what flesh and spirit are. At the time of the Bible, the people did not believe, the Hebrews did not have an idea that the flesh was the physical body only, and that somehow the physical body was bad and things like sex were bad. That's completely against any understanding we have of the Hebrew understanding of it. That came from the Greek philosophies of the Epicureans and the Stoics. And it was brought into Christianity by Augustine and some others who believed that any kind of fleshly impulse was a sin of itself. Therefore, it's better, you're a more righteous person if you don't have sexual desires, or you kill those sexual desires and any other desire you might have. And so now that you get to Martin Luther, then the flesh and the spirit, any kind of desire I have is the flesh, is the physical body. If I enjoy having a good meal, then that somehow it's sinful. We have food is sinful today. The Bible doesn't ever picture food as sinful by itself. And here's how I would define this for people. That walking by the flesh is walking and doing what it means, doing what you want to do, following the desires of your heart. That's walking. Of course, you only have five senses.
Right.
And if you live according to those senses, you're only going to do certain things because your senses tell you these things, if you only go by the five bodily senses. And in the end, you will please those senses, mm-hmm. by doing what you want to do. This is a problem from the Garden of Eden. The spiritual man then, though, is different. The spiritual man doesn't listen to his own heart. He listens to the word of God.
Exactly.
So the spiritual, Now, according to the Calvinists and Reformed people, people that just depend upon the word aren't spiritual because they're not getting an experience. A spiritual, to us today, spiritual means emotional. That's the equivalency in most modern common guard variety Christianity. Spiritual equals emotional.
Like when you fall down in a worship service because you've been struck by
something. This is somehow spiritual as opposed to other things that you're doing. Now, the Bible does not use the word spiritual that way. It used the word spiritual to mean people who are listening to the Spirit of God through the Word of God. That's why Paul tells those who, 1 Corinthians 14:38, he says, if any of you claim to be spiritual or a prophet, let him acknowledge the things that I write to you are the Word of God. Okay, so Paul says, you think you're spiritual? Let test that man as he's spiritual or a prophet. What does he think about the Word? Then you'll know if he's spirit. You see, so you got lots of hints like this.
Yeah.
And so the problem that I forgot how I was going, where I was going with this, but a lot of us have the idea that being spiritual is following our emotions. And in the end, that just leads you back into yourself, which is the wrong direction for a Christian, to be led back into our own self, our own feelings, own desires. But when you read the Word of God, you and understand this is the Spirit of God speaking to you, and let it alter your heart. Now you're being led in another direction. I'm telling you, Yvonne, in the last years, having read the gospel, having read the gospels and words of Jesus over and over again, I can tell you that I'm just terrified by them more as I get older. The demands of what truly the demands that Jesus makes upon my heart, in even just the words in red, much less
the rest
of other one, is terrifying to me because it's so demanding on my heart to love my neighbor as myself and to do all the other things
to
that
be
Jesus
forgiving.
Talks about. Yes. And so those things, and I think the older I get, the more terrifying I think it is that you can't just pass this off as something that is easy to do. Wasn't it Chesterton that said it isn't that Christianity has been tried and found wanting, that it's been tried and found too difficult?
Good point.
I think that's a Chesterton quote or close to this point. People don't reject it because it's been tried and found wanting. They reject it because it's just too hard to do. Because what do people want? We want to do what we want to do. No one can tell me what to do.
It's all about self.
Or from there to I'm gonna live once and YOLO.
Mm-hmm.
Did a sermon sometime back on YOLO and FOMO. YOLO, you only live once, and then FOMO is the fear of missing out. These two things really guide young people in their philosophy.
And they really are missing out because they're missing out on eternity.
Right. And they're missing out Titus says that the gospel has the promise of the life that now is it Timothy or Titus, the promise of the life that now is and the life that's to come. The gospel has a promise for both
right here
and eternity, and we certainly are missing out on the one on eternity, but so many of us are missing out on the promise of the life that now is because we're so focused on pleasing ourselves. And this is where, I've mentioned those older people that I see more and more dropping into services, tuning into something like this. They're beginning to realize that my life has been a complete failure. It's so sad living in Florida, and I just met them more and more as time goes by.
Yeah, you know, this is God's waiting room.
Yes, but I'm meeting, we meet older people who have lived their life the way they want to. Maybe they've been divorced two or three times and they alienated from their children and whatnot, and they have nothing. And I get called to go see these people, sometimes at the hospital or other places. And the help I can offer at that point is limited to what they might be expecting because they've already made so many decisions in the wrong direction in their life. I can't undo them all with some magic words. We had a fellow that came to services a few years back. But another fellow who would it's a long story, but he would go to all the free dinners around town, there were churches, and he'd get free meals. And he met this fellow there. This fellow had been amputated from diabetes and stuff. He's in a wheelchair. His name is Jim. And he told him, if you come to my church, they'll help you there. Well, so Jim comes. But he's never asking for anything material, I realized after a few minutes. But finally he tells me, I thought, well, what's your background, Jim? You're a nice guy. Quiet. He says, well, my background is grew up Roman Catholic. Didn't know anything, but I stopped when I was a kid. Didn't mean anything to me. But one day, I'm not teaching Bible class. I'm sitting in the back, and Jim's a few rows in front of me on the other side. One of our other members, you might know Wally Munoz. I don't know if he went to Midway or not. But anyway, Wally teaching class about baptism or something at that point. He's talking about the fact that he had been a Catholic and was baptized when he was an infant and wasn't what the Bible said. And so Jim just stopped. Jim's never said a word in services for weeks and months. He says, just outbursts. But Wally, what about me?
Wow.
And Wally stopped and he says, huh? He says, what about me? He said, I'm a Catholic just like you. He says, what about me? Do I need? And then he turns to me. You know, as I'm in the, he says, Mike, he says, what about me? Do I need to be baptized? I was baptized when I was an infant. He says, I just never knew. And I said, well, Jim, I said, have you done what Wally said? Have you done the very things that Wally has already talked about? I said, that's something I don't know. Do you? You know that? Well, he turned back around. So we get done. I go up to give the invitation to Miss Later. Okay. Now, Jim has never been to the front of our building. He's only been at the back, very back row, in his wheelchair. Here he comes down the aisle. So they're still singing. I sit down beside Jim in the wheelchair. And he says, I need to be baptized. He says, I have never done what God said. I want to do what God says. He had found, he had no one. He had no one in his life. He had been married maybe a long time ago. No children. He had one brother who was alienated from. He had no one in his life by himself. That's why he was struggling. He said, I blame God because I was in a wheelchair. I spent weeks in the hospital blaming God because I had no legs and had no way to make a living. But he says, I've always lived under the table. I have no pension. I have nothing because I didn't pay in Social Security. I have nothing because I was always basically tricking the system. And then I found myself with no legs, and I'm cursing God because of it. And one day I just realized, you know, Jim, this is your fault. This is what he tells me. This is your fault. This isn't God's fault that you're like you were. And that's why he ends up in church at some process. So we're sitting there, and I'm thinking to myself, so I tell him, I said, now, Jim, I said, I'd love to baptize you, but I said, we got to think about the logistics of this. How are we going to get this done? And he says, oh, you know, he says, Mike, he says, I've been sitting here looking at the baptistry. Got a 3 or 4 foot wall and water. He says, you can see the wall. He says, you know, he says, I think if you just help me, I can get over that wall into that water.
Wow.
He didn't know he had step. I almost cried. I'm crying right now. What faith. I said, Jim, we have steps on either side. Can you go backwards up steps? Yeah. I said, there's a little hump at the top. We'll go down on the steps on the other side into the water, maybe chest high, and then I'll baptize you. Oh, I can do that. That'll be simple. Now.
Was that God or not?
This is what makes you want to preach the gospel.
Yes.
It isn't all those guys in suits who grew up in the church who don't appreciate what they have or whatever you want to be, or who are mean to all the strangers and just want people who believe like they do to sit in the pew. This is what makes you preach the gospel, a man like Jim. And I baptized him that night. I've never met many people who will crawl over a wall with no legs to get in that water.
Well, just like the guy on the road. And he said, here is water. Yeah. What does hinder me?
Yeah. Well, Jim had some hindrances. But now he died a couple years later suddenly one day, found him dead. He had a bad heart. But he lived faithfully and tried to do the best he could, croaking out hymns, cutting out stuff for people, wanted more stuff to do, lived faithful till he died. And he's not one of those older guys. He's in his late 50s, early 60s, you see, who had lived a life like he wanted to. Circumstances came and slapped him upside the head. Now, some people just curse God and die.
Right.
But so you just never know. When I first saw him come and the other guy told me he just came because I told him you'll help him, I'm thinking, oh, man, another little lamb I have to feed and give money out of my own pocket to and just wants my –
But you did feed him.
Just wants – I did. But I thought he probably wanted just some of my money.
But he wanted God.
He proved he wanted God. Most don't. Okay, he's probably, I shouldn't say this, he's one of the ones who are maybe less that were given money that actually were there for something besides money.
And you're not going to believe this, but we're in the last 5 minutes of this show.
Oh, are we already? I'm sorry.
No,
you better
no.
stop me from talking.
No.
But,
I haven't got anything
I want to talk about.
Well, that's okay. You're
about.
Coming back, right?
Oh, well, I suppose I will if you want to have me
Of
back,
course.
Depending on what people say. But I'm sorry I get choked up at the gym there. I got a bunch of stories like that. If you want to hear a whole story show on conversions.
We'll
I,
do that.
A whole bunch of them.
We will do that.
But those are the reasons that people want to preach the gospel, I think. Do you understand what I'm saying when
Absolutely.
I say that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is where my heart is. This is why I do what I do, because I just want to plant a seed. I may not even know what happens to that seed, but I know God knows.
See, one thing that happened, one reason, I've been at Savona Boulevard now for 26 years, since 1996. However long that's been, and we've built a building since then. But I stayed there partly because, especially since we built the building, every Sunday we have people walk in off the street. Most of the time, multiple people walk in off the street that have never been there before.
Wow!
I would say 90% of the Sundays since I've been there, that's happened. I haven't found an opportunity like that anywhere else.
No.
Even this small place, most of those people go away. I never see them again. We do the best we can. I try to preach the gospel straight and plain and to them nicely with a heart, but they don't want what we're giving. But there's always some who do. And I think I believe, although I can't prove it, that many of those people go away and the seed's been planted.
And that's all we're supposed to
I'm
do.
Trying, we're trying to teach them to be just a Christian. I think they go away and they will go somewhere else and they want to be just a Christian.
So tell the folks that are here local and even people that come down here what time your services are.
Well, right now we meet at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning for adult Bible study and kid Bible study. Usually starts about 10 after 10 because our radio show runs till 10.
Right.
But the 10 to 11, 11 to 12 is our regular worship, preaching, communion, all that stuff. And then we don't meet on Sunday night anymore for a while. We're going to resume that soon. But then Wednesday night at 7:30, a Bible class again. And we're at 2196 Southwest Savona Boulevard in Port St. Lucie. That's at the north end of Savona Boulevard on the southwest corner. And, you know, we're a very ethnically, racially mixed group, very much so. I put up my scriptures both in the references in both Spanish and Creole as well as English.
Nice.
So, you know, you're welcome there. Everybody's welcome to come and see, I would say, like they told Nathaniel, come and see.
Come and see. So, ladies and gentlemen, Brother Mike Schmidt from Savona Boulevard Church of Christ has been my guest. And we did get live on Facebook, which I will repost everywhere. This show will be up in archives. It will also go up on both of the radio stations. Feed My Sheep on radio.co and the Great Commission on Life 365 Radio, which also has apps. You can download the app for Life 365 from Apple and Google, and then you just type in the Great Commission, and you can carry us anywhere you go. I will bring Mike back because he has made an imprint on my heart today, and I want all of you all to be imprinted with this man of God who is a servant, who understands he's a servant, and who is willing to serve. Until next time, we will be having another show on April the 12th at 1:30. Hearts of Faith will be here again. And in between, well, that was April 12th.
May 12th.
They'll be here in June. They were here on May 12th. But I want to tell you all that I appreciate you listening in. This show will be in archives. I will put it up. Please share and know that we are just Christians. Thank you for listening. Mike, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.